Oh, such a good question.
Well, what do you come with these questions? That's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. It's Ben Baker coming to you. I love doing this show. I love the audience. I love the guests. I love everybody that's part of this show because I'm always learning something new. And this week, we're talking off mic. My two guests today are two of the most passionate, some of the most friendly guys I've met. They've just written a new book. I want to talk to you all about it, but we're going to get into a lot more of that. We're going to get into their partnership because that's really the important thing. Con Apostolopoulos and Dr. Ilya Gogouras. I have to make sure we get the doctor in there.
If you don't get that in, I'm leaving right now.
That's it. And I totally understand that. I totally get that. You know, you work hard, you get that PhD or that MD behind your name. Everybody deserves it. You deserve to have that doctor in front of your name. It's an important thing. One of these days, my PhD stands for piled higher and deeper, but that's a different story altogether.
The only reason why I got the PhD was when I do like restaurant reservations, I want to hear Dr. Ilya. I get better seats at the restaurant.
Exactly. Paging Dr. Ilya. Oh, yes, yes. We've got a better table for you, sir. Yes. I'll have to work on that one.
That's right.
I get business cards, you know, printed up with PhD on the back. They won't know the difference.
That's it.
Mild, high, deeper.
Exactly. Let's get into this. You guys wrote a book, you know, during COVID. And I mean, I wrote a book as well. I wrote a book called Leading Beyond a Crisis. But your book, Seven Keys to Navigating a Crisis, is a phenomenal read. I'm going to leave it for other people to read. I don't want this to be a rehash of the book. We can get into, you know, a couple little things about the book itself. But to me, I want to talk about the process. But before we talk about the process and before we talk about the partnership of you guys, because your partnership is really strong, and that's what created such a great conversation, the book, and everything that's come out of it. I want to find out a little bit about each one of you guys, because it's one of these things where one plus one truly makes three. The sum is greater than the parts. So, Con, why don't you go first? Give us a little story about yourself, then we'll go to Ilya, and then we'll get into the conversation.
Sure. I am the change management and performance improvement part of our equation. I'm the one that has some of the corporate background, some of the experience, a lot of working knowledge and experience of handling enterprise-wide change efforts, helping organizations and companies and teams make those transitions. And many times those changes are either by choice, initiated by the leadership team, but more times than not, they're a response to market conditions or, in this case, a crisis that may have come about. So from that perspective, I bring that part into the equation of our partnership with Dr. Ilya. Doctor?
My background, Ben, and to your audience, is I spent the first half of my career as a clinical psychologist in private practice, and the second half transitioned over to executive coaching, leadership training, and development. And I'm a happiness expert. About 5 years ago, I wrote a book called Seven Paths to Lasting Happiness, and it resonated with the public and was fortunate enough to become a number one bestseller. And I speak internationally on happiness and corporate wellness. I'm very passionate about that because to me, I think happiness is the, as Aristotle once said 2,500 years ago, is the whole meaning and purpose of life, the whole aim to human existence, end quote. And whatever Aristotle says, I follow him. And I think in today's world where we're dealing a multitude of crises, you have COVID-19, you have the mental health crisis, we'll talk about that some more. You have the economic and financial crisis and the political, social, and racial unrest and upheaval. I feel like our own personal happiness is more important than ever because the stress level has gone through the roof. So I want to share that happiness and wellness. It's possible, even in the midst of adversity. I guess that's the key.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. We're always in the midst of adversity to different varying degrees. I mean, the three of us are old enough that this isn't our first crisis. It probably won't be our last. And the difference with this crisis is, and it comes down to the happiness, the mental health, the change management. We all need to understand that It's how we adapt. It's how we perceive it, because life happens. It's how we react to life. It's things happen in our lives, whether it's individual sickness, whether it's collective sickness, whether it's a change at the office, where it's a change where the entire office ceases to exist. Those things are 99.9% out of our control, but it's how we react to it. So I want to talk to you guys, and before we get into how you two work best together, because I'm really interested in group dynamic and partnerships, but I really want to dive into this first part with you guys of how your thoughts got together and created this book, because you're dealing with dynamic change management, you're dealing with mental health, you're dealing with all these sort of crises that are coming together. What was the impetus that brought your collective heads together that created this book?
So on March 15th, to be exact, beware the Ides of March, like it says in Julius Caesar.
Exactly.
It's a big deal. That's why I remember. I had a very strong prompting, like as loud as I'm talking to you right now, that Ilya, you need to get a book out. There's a tsunami coming about the pandemic. You need to get it out in like 45 days. Not next November, not in 2021. My first book took 3 years to get out. So 45 days, like, this is insane. But I realized there was an urgent need. And as soon as I got that impression, I picked up the phone and I called Coach Khan, who's my best friend and brother, in whom I trust implicitly. And I said, I'm going to start writing a book tomorrow morning. But then, are you in or are you out? Simple question. And without hesitating, he said, I'm in. And he and I spent the next 45 days, literally morning, noon, and night, cranking out this book, doing our due diligence, doing our research. And that's how the book came about. Now, you may want to ask him, why did he say yes without even thinking twice about it? I mean, without hesitating. That's for him to explain.
Con?
I'll take that as my cue then. Well, there's a saying, another old saying, that says, luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. In many ways, we were very fortunate, very lucky, because Ilya and I already had a relationship, a very strong partnership and a friendship, and almost like a brotherhood, that we were supporting each other over the course of our careers, probably the last decade. So we already had an established relationship there. He and I had already started partnering on writing projects together. This is a field that we know a few things about, not just theoretically, not just because it's a course we took in college, but because we've experienced it firsthand. Dr. Ilya doesn't talk about it often, but part of the reason why he has expertise in this is because he has firsthand knowledge and certifications with mental first aid in the time of crisis. He was there at UCLA when he was finishing up his PhD, in all fairness, during the riots, during the fires, during the earthquakes. And when they called out for people to come out and help, he was first in line. So he obtained a certification through Red Cross there.
And trial by fire, I'm guessing.
Yep, literally. And 20 plus years ago, after he had moved here to Colorado, when the Columbine shooting happened, he was one of the first people that went down there to help the kids and the first responders. So he has very, very strong firsthand experience about what it takes to deal with that. He was down in Haiti after the earthquakes. He doesn't always talk about those things. As his partner, I know those things. And because he's not one to toot his own horn, I'll toot it for him because he has a lot of that experience. So for us, it was a natural progression. Now, I know the stereotypes. Normally, when two Greeks get together, we open a restaurant. But because neither of us...
I would frequent that restaurant. That would be a good restaurant to eat at.
So because we're looking at the situation and saying, what can we do to help? I mean, this crisis hit all of us. And in many ways, we had a choice to make. We could sit there and feel paralyzed by fear, or we could address the danger for ourselves and for other people. And we felt well-positioned, having experienced a lot of these crises ourselves, having seen a lot of that stuff. I went to Katrina, to down in New Orleans after Katrina, and I saw the devastation. I had the opportunity through the organization that I was working with at the time to volunteer and go down and help rebuild some of that stuff. Rebuild playgrounds for the kids to get them back and start putting smiles on people's faces in some of the most impoverished areas, some of the parishes down in New Orleans. I saw firsthand the devastation. A crisis, no matter if it's a global pandemic or a very personal one, like the people that we coach a lot of times that have dealt with personal anguish, personal loss, it's a crisis. And we've had that experience and we've had the opportunity to help people. So now was our chance to pull all those things together. The time was right. And because it was right, because that energy flow, that universal calling hit both of us, there was no other option but to say yes. And there was no other option but to finish this in 45 days, because that's when it was needed.
Well, I mean, there's two things that come with that. First, I can't stress enough how difficult and how challenging it is to write a book in 45 days. I wrote my first book in 45 days. That's the funny thing that is. It was exactly 45 days. And I wrote it 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours at night for 45 days running. And then I agonized over it for 9 months. Mm-hmm. And you worry about every single word and you stress over every sentence and is it this, this, that? And the truth of the matter is, once I got through the process, you realize it's far more important to get it out there and far more important to make sure that you're helping people than to have it perfect. That's what revision number two is. And that's what revision number three is. You can always write a second book. You can always write an addendum to the book and be able to get it out. But being able to put concrete information out into the hands of people that need it when they need it is a phenomenal thing. And the fact that you guys were able to sit there and say, look, we need to get this information out. It's a calling. It's something that's deep into our soul. Are you in? The answer was yes. And you went for it is an amazing thing. And anybody who's actually sat there at a blank piece of paper on a keyboard, looking at the screen and going, okay, where do I go next? They'll appreciate how difficult truly that is. So I give you guys both kudos for that. But the second thing that I'm interested in is just the fact is the 10, what enabled you guys to do this was the 10 years of relationship that you guys had already. You guys had a common language. You guys had common history. You had common ideology. So take me back into that. It's just, how was that friendship first created? What brought you guys together? And how have you been able to foster it to bring you to the position where you were able to say, Con, are you in or are you out? And the answer was immediately, I'm in.
I think, first of all, you know, we were introduced by a mutual friend. She knew both of us and we had lunch together and we just hit it off. We're the fans of the same Greek soccer team, which is a big deal in Greece. It's bigger than your political party, actually, to give you an idea. It borders on religion. So that was a huge, the first.
I thought it was religion.
And then we're literally 1 hour drive away. Our homes in Greece, I mean, we're basically from the same neighborhood. Think about that. In the whole country, we have a lot in common. We both grew up on the water in Greece, and we just have a lot of common factors. But more importantly, I think it's the character of the person. I trust Coach Con with my life. And I wrote that publicly the other day on LinkedIn. I mean, I trust him with anything. He's like my brother. So we got to know each other. We got to spend time with one another. Our philosophies are very much in alignment. And then a couple of years ago, I was invited by Arianna Huffington to start writing on her Thrive Global platform, which is a wonderful platform. You know, I highly recommend it. And after the first few articles, I asked Coach Con, are you interested in this at all? Because I think, you know, you have a lot to say. And he said, yes, made the introduction. He got accepted. So then we started writing together. So we did have, obviously not a book, but we had some practice into how we can collaborate into putting an article together. We can each bring our own unique strengths and get it out. And the articles have been very well received. I mean, we're always about practical things for people to do, right? So when it came time about this book, I knew there's no way I'm going to get this book out in 45 days by myself. There's just no. And I knew that he was interested in writing and perhaps becoming a published author, although I'm sure he hadn't planned on doing that for 2020. There was nobody else I would have called. There was no like second option, third option. He was it. Either he said yes or no. So, and I'm glad you said yes, my friend. And I'm glad that this book is out because it has helped, I think, a lot of people and it's helped a lot of organizations too. So we should talk about that as well.
That's my take on that. But Con, I'd love to get it from your point of view as well.
When you're talking about a partnership, it cannot exist without the mutual respect, without a similar philosophy and a trust that allows you to be able to be candid with each other. Honestly, be able to say what you feel, object when you need to, call each other on stuff when you need to, but also have each other's back. And that's what that is. I mean, if he invited me to go anywhere from that perspective, our relationship is strong enough that I wouldn't question it. I would go. And that's part of the process. And I know he would feel the same way. And that was the foundation. I mean, a lot of times people come into partnership because they have maybe a shared objective or they're trying to let's say they were trying to write a book because they thought it was going to be a success. And then they try to build the relationship. We had the relationship before we had the target of what we tried to do. And that's not always the traditional way. It's not always the easiest way, quite honestly. But because we have such synergy, we have such mutual respect with each other, we have the same value system. And philosophically, we're very, very compatible in how we view things. We are diverse enough to be able to enrich each other in our perspectives and kind of broaden it without really altering it completely. And that, I think, is a key part of being able to write well together, to communicate together, to operate together. We diverge enough that we offer those perspectives, but not so much that we are opposing in our thoughts. That makes sense.
Yeah. And we're true 50-50 partners. I mean, you asked early on, well, what's decision-making look like? The reason why partnerships work, like the one that I have with Connie, is there's no ego involved. And that's saying a lot for two Greeks, I'm telling you. But I think you put it so well, Ben, the sum of 1 and 1 equals 3. When you get your ego out of the way and you just want to do the very best you can, like, I'm happy for his successes, he's happy for my success, and we're happy collectively for our success. And I'm big picture a lot of the times. I'm terrible in details. He's fantastic in details, to the point where he sometimes drove me crazy because I'm like, let's get the book out there like you. And he's like, no, it has to be a certain way. But the fact that he's so good at that made the book better. It flowed better. It read better. The outlay, the way that was laid out, was better as a result of that. So I can go like, I'm ready to jump in. He's like, slow down a little bit. Now, I can maybe frustrate him because I'm always all in immediately. He might frustrate me a little bit but I see the value in it. There's value to his approach and his methodology, right? I mean, he can do project management like nobody's business, change management like nobody's business. That's good for me because I'm not that way. That's not my strength. I have other strengths. So that collaboration actually worked out great.
Well, it's realizing that, as you said, you're different but equal. You each come to the table with a certain set of skills. There is that overlap of the concentric circles, but the circles do have their own separate parts. And sit there and say, okay, Khan, you're really good at this. Ilya, you're really good at this. We're going to come together and be able to create something that is going to be the best of Khan, the best of Ilya. And we may disagree a little bit, but we're going to talk about it. And we're going to go, wait a second here. You're right or you're right. But in the end, it comes up with something, as I said, the sum is greater than the parts. Now, when we're looking at that, when we're looking at the situation and you guys, you guys have been doing this for a while. As you said, you were writing together on Thrive. You've known each other for a while. You come from the same part of Greece together. So there's lots of commonalities. But writing a book, especially the intensity of 45 days, because you set yourself a goal. You set yourself a goal that we want to have this thing out in a certain amount of time because we want to make this relevant and we want to make the thing. What are the added pressures that came from that and how did you guys deal with it? Because as I said, you guys can all look back and say, oh, it was great. It was a wonderful experience. But you know what? It not always is. There's always challenges and anybody who says differently is a liar. So what are the things that you guys had to work through in order to make sure that the partnership stayed as strong as it did?
And Con, you can take that. I just want to add one more thing to you. The reason why I felt like it had to get out, first of all, to help as many people as we could. Look, there are going to be other books written about the pandemic. I just want us to be the first to market, if that makes any sense. So yes,
absolutely.
There was a lot of pressure. You're done right. That's why I said, if you get out in November, there'll be 10 other books. Let's do it as quickly as we can. Now, Con, take it from there. But I just want to clarify that there was a purpose and a reason why there was a rush. The pressure to get in 45 days. It was not just like some magical number. There's a reason for it.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. Oh, absolutely. And I agree with you completely. Being the first to market, especially in a book like that, all of a sudden you're the industry leader and people are looking to you. So I agree with you 100%. But as I said, there's got to be pressures that came along with that. So I'm curious, what were the type of pressures you guys had and how did you guys deal with it?
Well, think about it this way. Just like everybody else, all of a sudden, we are facing not only an uncertainty regarding our health. I mean, it was still early on, and a lot of unknowns were out there. We were all freaking out about, what does this mean? All of a sudden, we're sheltering in place. We're putting a situation for the first time where everybody is kind of isolated at home. There's forced quarantining going on. You add on that the financial insecurity. For all of us that do this kind of work, like Dr. Ilya said, when all of our speaking engagements, our workshops, all of that stuff, all of a sudden got put on pause and on hold, and potentially down the road within a few weeks got canceled because a lot of these organizations didn't know what to expect, that puts an enormous amount of pressure on you. So all of a sudden now we are experiencing, as we're writing, all of the things that we're writing about. We had to deal with the same sort of emotional insecurity, mental anguish that everybody else around us was facing. What we had that other people may not have had is the experience of having dealt with this, having coached other people through this process, having led teams through this process, and being prepared, just like our book title says, navigating through this process. And you said it earlier yourself, Ben, we've been around long enough to know that crises have happened in the past and we've survived them. We've been through them. So what we tried to do is put those things that worked for us and were working for us in the moment down on paper at the same time as we were writing it. Now, again, I'd like to say that it was all smooth sailing. It wasn't. I mean, again, when you have the pressure of time, when you have conflicting styles that sometimes we were getting on each other's nerves. Like Ilya said, you know what? My desire to get it right and make sure that certain details were in place conflicted sometimes with his desire to move forward, his bold move forward. Sometimes his high-level view of things left me looking at the situation going, we can't say that without substantiating that. We have to provide more details. Sometimes my tendency to write more technically was in conflict with his natural style of being conversational. I mean, there were times where it felt like I was writing like a PhD as opposed to him. And he's the one that writes in very simple language and straight from the heart. And being able to pull all of these things together is not an easy thing. But again, what was the piece? We had a common goal. We had a love and a trust and a respect for each other. And at the end of the day, we knew that we needed to make this happen. And our goals were aligned with the book's goals, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
And mind you, when we did Thrive Global, we'd always get together, like physically get together. You know, my office, his office, we'd get it done. This was not done that way because remember, this is middle of March, April to May, when everything shut down, like everything, the economy was shut down, everything shut down. So we actually did it remotely, which was a weird thing. Like, our collaborations usually were physically together. We bounce things off. We talk, we laugh, we eat, we drink, we'd be merry, and we write something. It wasn't like that. So I would write, he would write, we would send it back to one another, make corrections, make comments. So we lived on Zoom, like what we're doing right now, or Skype or whatever it was at the time, day in and day out. Like every day would have, like, at the end of the day, like a huddle, like a football huddle, basically, and discuss, you know, successes, what we want to tweak, what's the schedule for this week, who's doing what. So there were a lot of moving parts. It wasn't as easy as it sounds, believe me.
So did you guys each write certain chapters, or did you collaborate on every chapter?
Yes, there were some chapters that, you know, for example, in the 7 Keys to Navigating a Crisis, self-care, that's the happiness stuff that comes easy to me. There's preparation and taking initiative. Those are two other ones. That's clearly Khan's strength because, I mean, he's so much better than that. Awareness maybe was a little bit more mine. You know, we took leads basically in certain chapters and the other person supported. Flexibility, I think we kind of did it together. And then positive attitude, I think we both did it together. And I think the last one was kindness. We had written about kindness anyway together. So I think it was a combination. I took the lead in some chapters, he took the lead in some others, and some other we did together, yeah.
Right. So one person would actually, if you were taking the lead on an actual chapter itself, would you write the whole chapter and then send it off to look at, or would you just send it off in sections, or and then you guys would collaborate, you know, based on sections of the chapter, or was it, here's my finished chapter, now let's sit down and talk about it?
No, it was never that way. It was much more of an agile approach, much more of a modular approach.
Right.
What we would basically do is, essentially, we had almost like a work breakdown structure, almost like we had buckets within buckets. So we had our main chapters that we knew. So we had the big board in my office and everything else, the big whiteboard that I have. We had sticky notes everywhere. We had it segmented. We were moving things around. There were areas and topics and things that we wanted to cover. that could have gone in a number of different chapters. And we were constantly massaging and moving things around until it felt right, until there was a natural flow. Because you have to remember, not only are writing styles different, but also the content that we're providing and adding into the book is coming from two different perspectives.
Absolutely.
So again, that's part of the power of it. So blending those things together and writing ideas and really pulling things together, it was literally section by section, by subsection, and sometimes even at the paragraph level, breaking it down. And really, it was essentially writing things down and then saying, okay, this piece, where does it fit? If it goes here, not quite. It might be better here. Let's tweak it a little bit. It'll flow better in this chain. So by the time we were done, we had moved these things around 15 different times. And that's the beauty of it, because at the end of the day, what is it? It's a roadmap of resilience and hope. That's all it is. All of the seven keys put together. If you look up the definition or how do I achieve resilience under any organizational piece, under any academic piece or any military document, you will see all of these elements in there in one shape, form or another.
And I can't stress how difficult this is. I mean, the process that you guys are describing and the way that you guys have come together and built the partnership, this could have taken a year. This absolutely could have taken a year with the back and the forth and the agonizing this, because in normal circumstances, we would all have had lives that we were trying to build on top of this. But because of what COVID was, because all of us had basically had a lot of our work thrown away, we had the time and we had the effort for those people who are listening to this months, years, decades down the road, to realize that there truly was, there was 8 or 9 months of time where you really truly had a lot of time on your hands because a lot of your clients just weren't doing anything. So there was the opportunity to be able to focus at that level and be able to create something that great in that short of time.
And by the way, if this was a different topic, because Ron and I, we've thought about the writing and we have started even perhaps the seven keys to great leadership, whatever. I'm just kind of making, but a leadership book in essence. With this book, there was an urgency that we had to get it out now. If he and I were still writing and we got it out in March of 2021, it'd be too freaking late.
It's irrelevant at that point in time.
It needed to happen now because I could really feel like people are going to struggle mightily and soon. So there was an urgency to get it out specifically because of the topic and the times that we live in, which is this unusual. I feel like the world is in a crisis, unlike anything that most of us have seen in our lifetime, probably going back to the Second World War, like 75 years ago, when you can say, yes, back then it was a health, death, destruction, economic collapse, you know, but there were a lot of things that, but since most of us are not 85 and above, like where we could actually remember the Second World War, most of us have not lived through this. So, and people are struggling and they need help now. That's the bottom line. So it wasn't easy. But we were relentless. Like there were no days off. Like there was no, like, no, we need to keep going. And what Khan said, yes, we moved things around quite a bit. And all of a sudden, it's almost like putting together a puzzle piece and then it fits. When it comes together like that, it's beautiful.
No, it's amazing when that last piece of the puzzle, you have this 1,000-piece or 5,000-piece puzzle and you start at the edges and you're not really sure which way it's going. But as you move towards the center and everything starts coming together and you put that last piece in, the elation that comes with that is incredible.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a great analogy. I mean, I'm thinking about that as an analogy. Now, I don't want to leave you guys without taking a few minutes and talking about the essence of the book itself, because you're right. There are multiple crises happening simultaneously. And most people look at this and says, oh, okay, it's a health crisis or it's a financial crisis. It's a lot more than that. As you said, there's 4 or 5 different crises that are happening simultaneously. And I think that's where the beauty of the book comes in, is that it allows people to, first of all, understand that there are multiple crises happening. And second of all, how to deal with block after block after block after block piling up on top of your shoulders and how to manage that. So I want you guys to talk about that, because I don't want to leave without having that conversation.
Well, it's important for people to understand that what we're experiencing right now, whether it's a global pandemic, like we said, or it's a personal crisis, which for you, it might as well be global because your entire world gets rocked. or if you are an individual struggling on a personal level, or you're a leader, a business owner within an organization struggling to figure out how are you going to keep your people safe and how are you going to keep the doors open, which are the biggest concerns that business leaders have right now. These are universal truths. That's what we found. They have applicability across the board because our capacity to deal with the change, to deal with the crises is like a sponge in many ways. And that sponge gets saturated every time another thing gets piled on. And what we're dealing with right now is that oversaturation of our ability to cope with that, which creates in itself a whole bunch of trauma that we need to address. And if we deal with it with the same way we would with grief, with the sense of a loss of way things were, understanding that there's ambiguity now during this time of transition, and being hopeful about the new beginnings that we can have afterwards, but not because it's going back to the way things were, but rather starting to look at it and create that next normal that we're going to deal with, because there's going to be another change and another change and another change at some point. So that's a big part of what we're trying to address. Dr. Ilya, jump in.
To me, you know, the seven keys to navigating a crisis really do start with self-care. And we created a personal health assessment that has been so valuable. I can't even tell you. When we give talks, I've given a talk on a nursing and healthcare conference that was supposed to take place in Barcelona. One of the things that got canceled became virtual. And the entire talk was on that. How can you take care of yourself physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually? People like ate it up. I can't tell you, the world is starving for like, tell me, basically hold a mirror in somebody's and say, tell me what you're seeing. Okay, I may be strong physically, but really have neglected or don't even know how to take care of myself mentally and emotionally. Or maybe my spiritual and my faith is strong, but I've neglected myself physically. It's important for people to take a snapshot of where they are right now, even after all these months of the pandemic. And then, you know, we give them the tools. This is how you overcome these particular issues. We talk about being aware and listening mindfully, to meditate, to ponder, to get quiet. Listen to your inner wisdom, listen to your intuition, and then act upon whatever that's telling you. You know, we talk about flexibility, and I'll let Con, you can do the rest of the keys. We talk about being flexible and adaptable in a crisis, and we use the analogy of the oak tree and the palm tree. Remember, the oak tree is this massive, beautiful, strong, immovable object, right? The oak tree has been here for 100 years. Nothing happens to it except in a crisis, except in a storm, except when there's enough rain, enough saturation of the ground, and then you got 150 mile hour wind. Guess what happens to oak trees? They come crashing down on cars, people, and homes, right? Even after 100 years. On the flip side, the palm tree, which is relatively thin compared to an oak tree, is so flexible at the peak of the storm. And imagine life storms, right? It bends and bends and bends. Finally, it's almost like parallel to the ground. But when the storm passes, just like the storms of life, it's still left standing. So we're asking people to be palm trees, not oak trees. I'm going to be tough and I'm going to, like, this is the way I've done things for the last 20 years. I'm not changing. Well, guess what? You're going to be left behind, organizationally speaking, or as an individual. So that's the first half of the book. Coach Con, you can take the second half.
And when you think about it, then transitioning from there, now you're starting to take more action. And part of that starts with preparation. I mean, it's not the first crisis we've had. If there's one thing we can count on, we're going to have a crisis here and there every so often. So what have we done to prepare for that? How have we managed that process? Now that we know that there's a possibility that we might be stuck at home, what are you doing? I mean, now we're hitting that second wave. Have you planned? Even something as simple as, how am I going to get my medication that I need? How am I going to make sure that I set up certain things, my contact list with my family members that I need to reach out to? Everybody's got a plan until you get smacked in the face. That's what Mike Tyson used to say. And now we've been smacked in the face. We got to make sure that we check, we document all the things that have worked for us so far. What do we need to keep doing or stop doing going forward? And then finally, start taking action. Not just planning, but take action. Because the minute you start taking action, you start regaining control. That resilience comes from the ability and the confidence that you can act even on the small things. And then that leads to a positive outlook and a positive attitude. Well, a positive attitude, what we call a navigational approach to things, it's not because you know exactly what's going to happen. You don't have control over everything. But what you do know is you're going to build on your previous knowledge and success and move forward, because you have the ability to assess not just what's changing, but what's not changing. And even though many people may react, and even ourselves, I mean, we reacted in a lot of different ways. At times, we might have been a victim. and looked at the situation and says, poor me, why is this happening to me? Well, it's happening to the entire world, actually. You might have been a critic because you know what? You're looking at it and saying, well, that's never going to work. It's never worked before. Why would it work now? My beliefs, my perspectives get in the way, and I'm criticizing everything, no matter how well-intended it is. Or I'm a deer in the headlights, and all of a sudden I'm looking around going, huh, I'm going to let Dr. Ilya jump into that one and take that one, and I'll just wait and see if he's still alive afterwards. No, and all of those are non-productive ways. But being a navigator means maintaining that positive attitude. It's not about sunshine and rainbows. It's about looking at the situation and saying, what's real danger that I need to address? What's fear? Fear is not my friend. In a moment of crisis, fear blinds us, whether it's the passive approach of a bystander or the critic and victim mode where we're being aggressive from that perspective. We do better than that. Be grateful. Look around. Like Dr. Ilya says a lot of times, you know what? Chances are there's probably a whole lot of people that are listening to us right now, you know what, that are better off than we have been, for example. And there's probably even more people beyond that around the world that are in a worse case than they are. So there's always going to be better and worse. Have a positive attitude. And then finally, show kindness. Show kindness. We started off with kindness to ourselves. We need to end with kindness towards others. And understanding that the minute we get out of our own head and out of our own way and start reaching out is the minute we become less pitiful about ourselves, victim-y about this whole thing, and start really getting into that navigator mode where we can help other people and start feeling better about things.
Sorry, let me add one more thing about the kindness, which is the last key. Believe it or not, as you know, that Coach Khan and I are like doing interviews like nonstop since May, like all over the world. We have gotten pushback about the kindness aspect. Yeah, I know you might find that hard to believe. People are like, are you serious? Like, I'm drowning here myself. I'm overwhelmed by all these things. You're asking me to go out and help other people. What am I, my brother's keeper? And I'm like, no, you're not your brother's keeper. You're your sister's keeper and your mother's keeper and your neighbor's keeper and the homeless person down the street or somebody who lives in India. Because if you can hear the sound of our voices right now, you're better off than most people. I co-host a podcast called The Kindness and Happiness Connection, and there's a direct link between kindness and happiness. Happy people by nature, because their batteries are full, go out and help other people. That's what they do. On the flip side, if you're feeling down and you take a moment or an hour and you go out and you perform an act of kindness and be of service to somebody else, that by itself makes you happy. So there's a direct link between those two. So I don't want to hear from people, I don't have time to be kind to other people. It's like, you know what? The humanity and the world needs kindness more than ever right now. And we all have it within ourselves to do that in small ways or large ways. I'm not apologizing about being kind. I'm asking people to go out and help somebody else.
And Ben, the thing is, as you can see, just by that quick overview of the seven keys, you can see how easily they are applicable, not just to individuals.
Absolutely.
But to organizations. I mean, it might look a little bit differently, but take even kindness. Corporate kindness is about how you treat your employees, how you treat your customers, what contributions are you making to the communities that you're serving, and the communities that have been loyal to you all these years as a business. I mean, that has a direct correlation on people's perception of your brand, and you know that better than anybody.
Hey, we could get together and have a podcast just on that. But gentlemen, I want to leave it there because I've got 50 more questions I'd love to ask you, but we've run out of time. What I want to say is that, you know what, we're going to be able to find, I'll put in the show notes, where to find seven keys to navigating a crisis, how to get a hold of Khan, how to get a hold of Dr. Ilya. I have loved having you guys both on the show. It's amazing. But I want to ask you one more question because I ask everybody this question as they walk out, and I want to hear both of your responses. As you leave a meeting, as you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
Do not procrastinate your happiness. Happiness now. Do not wait until when you retire or when the kids leave the house or when you get the raise or when this happens. No. There are no guarantees that any one of us will be here a year from now or even a month from now. So I say happy now, because the world is a better place when the happiest version of you is walking around. Think about that. What impact and influence you can have if you're on the positive side.
Love it. Khan?
Well, for me, anytime I leave a meeting or a space or a workshop that I've delivered or facilitated or a discussion that I've been part of, my challenge to everybody is, what's next? What are you going to do to make it happen? We talked about some good things. Now let's make it happen.
Guys, it's been a privilege and an honor, and I've loved having the two of you on for the conversation. Thank you for being such amazing guests. Thank you for everything that you're doing, and thanks for moving the needle.
Thank you, Ben.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?